Here's the story of how you can win a trip for two to LA to visit the iconic Brady Bunch house. Not only visit the home, but spend the day there exploring and brunching with members of the Brady Bunch cast. If you remember, Kristen, Michelle, and I had the time of our lives when we got to visit the home back in September. It was truly a magical experience. And now you can have an experience like that too, alongside cast members from the show. Simply visit thebradyexperience.com to enter the Brady Brunch sweepstakes. And from now through January 31st, PCPS listeners can get four entries for the price of one. All you have to do is put PCPS in the add order note section of the shopping cart. And the goodness doesn't stop there. For every 10 purchases you make, you'll have the opportunity to tour the house on your very own. Just remember to put PCPS in the add order note section of your shopping cart. You can feel good knowing that a portion of your purchase goes to No Kid Hungry, a campaign to help end childhood hunger in America. So get those entries in and cross your fingers. Good luck, everybody.
I really thought they were sleeping. Like, that was
maybe
a really bad thing to
Kristen.
Sleep in the same
you
bed.
Not. Also, how is that possible when you were 40 in 1974?
For a long time, I thought, because they did say, well, they would either say make love or they would say sleeping with. And so I think making love was like rolling around in the sheets. You're really making something. It was love. And then sleeping together was, that was very intimate. You slept in the same bed.
Hello world, there's a song that we're singing. Come on, get happy. A whole lot of loving is what we'll be bringing. We'll make you happy.
Welcome to the Pop Culture Preservation Society, the podcast for people born in the Big Wheel generation who knew that burping a Tupperware bowl does not mean throwing it over your shoulder and patting its back.
We believe our Gen X childhoods gave us unforgettable songs, stories, characters, and images, and if we don't talk about them, they'll disappear, like Marshall, Will, and Holly on a routine expedition.
And today, we'll be saving the primetime soap operas of the 80s that captivated us with glamour, scandal, sex, and most importantly, gargantuan shoulder pads.
I'm Carolyn.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Michelle. And we are your pop culture preservationists. Welcome to season 15, everybody.
What the F? Gosh, I'm sorry. I cannot. I mean, yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was just thinking, though, at least we think it's 15. Sometimes I'm like, is
well,
it?
Yeah, I didn't say anything because I was like, is it?
Someone fact check us, please.
Yes, I know. They're just all, I don't want to say running together because that sounds negative. It's just we're having so much fun. It's hard to keep count.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy. Well, this season, we have some really fun episodes and conversations coming to you guys listening. So buckle up.
We're excited to be back.
I know. And we're really excited for this first one too, about some of our favorite nighttime soaps. So the 1980s was a decade defined by so much pop culture awesomeness, MTV, blockbuster movies, and blockbuster movie, leg warmers, yuppies, breakdancing, and so much neon. And it was also the golden age of nighttime soap operas. These primetime dramas enraptured audiences with their opulent lifestyles, deliciously scandalous affairs, cliffhanger endings, and yes, like I just said a minute or so ago, gargantuan shoulder pads. So many shoulder pads.
What were we thinking? Just
oh
what were
God.
We thinking? It's like we were doing triangles. You know,
yes!
It's like Carol Burnett when she had like the curtain rod.
It was. Is it because it makes your waist look narrower? Because if that's the case, I'm bringing them back. I don't know.
I could definitely use that.
Wouldn't that be kind of fun? Let's do it, you guys. What if the three of us just started wearing gargantuan shoulder pads? Just like non-ironically. Just
and
like,
everything's
what?
In jewel tones. Everything's in jewel tones, like magenta and royal
purple.
Blue.
Yep. So these popular nighttime soaps dominated the ratings, drawing millions of viewers into the glamorous yet tumultuous excess worlds of their characters. And this excess was totally a hallmark of the early 80s, by the way. Everything was excess, wasn't it? Like shoulder, mm-hmm. like your shoulders.
Mm-hmm. Your hair. And the
hair. Your hair. Oh, my God. Mm-hmm.
The makeup, the eye makeup.
Yes.
Yes. Lip liner.
It was
so
a
much
lot.
Lip liner, different color, totally like 18 shades darker than your lipstick.
It was like your face was Technicolor. Yes.
It was a piece of art. Mm-hmm. It really was. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. So the combination of the high-stakes drama of these shows, the stunning fashion, and the jaw-dropping plot twists, which I think we're all going to get to in just a minute, created a perfect storm of addictive television that had viewers tuning in night after night to see what would happen next. Were you guys hooked?
Oh, yeah. I was not. I wasn't hooked on the genre, but my family was hooked on certain characters, and we were very loyal. And even though it's so funny, even though this was the antithesis of family viewing, in my house, it was family viewing.
Yeah,
same. All five Nilsons met in front of the TV every Thursday night at 9 p.m. and also on Friday night at 9 p.m. We got hooked on these characters and their exploits, and the same. It was sort of the same way we got hooked on Erica at lunchtime in the summertime when my parents weren't teaching school.
I was just going to say that when you said we got hooked on the characters, I was like, well, that tracks.
Yep.
You like this genre. Mm-hmm. For sure.
You know what? Do you remember how old you were? I was just going to say, you said you're all five Nielsens gathered. Mm-hmm. And I know that there's some age between like you and your sister, for example.
Mm-hmm. A lot.
I remember watching, especially Dallas, which we're going to talk about these in just a little bit. But I feel like I was probably too young. And it was just me and my mom that would watch it. My sister probably did too with Dallas. Dynasty, I think, was just me and my mom. But I do not have memories of feeling uncomfortable because, listen, there's a lot of sex. Why don't I have like feeling like, oh, I remember feeling so cringy? I don't. I just remember being like, oh, why? He's sleeping with who? You know?
And I was sleeping with. I really thought they were sleeping. Like that was
Maybe
a really bad thing
Kristen.
To sleep in the same
you
bed.
Not.
Also, how is that possible when you were 40 in 1974?
For a long time, I thought, because they did say, well, they would either say make love or they would say sleeping with. And so I think making love was like rolling around in the sheets. You're really making something. It was love. And then sleeping together was very intimate. You slept in the same bed.
And they're not like focusing in or dwelling on that particular scene. You know, it's like kind of in regular daytime soap operas. You see them like laying in bed, maybe after, or, you know, a kiss, but we're not like sitting there next to our parents while they're humping or
yeah, it's not
there
whatever,
was no you know, humping. And making noise.
No, there was no humping.
No, there was no humping or sound related to it. So it just was kind of a little graduation from what we kind of saw during the day. And we watched those soap operas with our moms and our grandmothers. And I never felt uncomfortable with the daytime soaps. So.
Well, and maybe that's why it was family viewing, because they were only insinuating. And then we took from it only what we could take from it, which was sleeping or rolling in the sheets.
Or making something.
Yeah, they're making love.
It's the boundary of what your little, you know, 9-year-old mind can handle. And it stops at like the makeout kiss or something. And then it's just like, oh, you're not supposed to be sleeping in the same bed with her. You're married to someone else. I know.
I also think it was that the 9 p.m. time slot was important because that's when everyone was home, right? We kids, now we were in junior high, we were in high school, we might have games, we might have practices, lessons. We had all the things in high school. We got a lot busier. But in the evening, everyone was home by 9 p.m.
That's true. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
That is. Now some people's dance classes start at 9 p.m.
Yes! I don't think we can overemphasize our 1980s obsession with wealth. Like this was, you mentioned yuppies.
Exactly.
Lifestyles of the rich and famous
and
with
excess.
Robin Leach.
Yes.
Everything was more, more, more. And all of a sudden people were setting their sights on finance careers with the goal of working on Wall Street, even though I had no idea where that was. I think most people didn't know where that was, but we were going to all work on Wall Street and you were going to make a lot of money. I went to college intending to be, wait for it, you're just going to die laughing. I was going to be an economics major. Yes, I was.
Well, no, that doesn't make us – that's – you're the mathematician of the PCPS. So
the
quote-unquote
mathematician. Well, just from my personality, that is ridiculous. Yeah. And I told people I wanted to be a stockbroker. I did not know what that was. I had no idea. And I didn't even pretend to know what it was. But it was what we were doing in 1986.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like I said earlier, it's the excess. The early mm-hmm. 80s were defined by excess, and money is one of them.
Right. Yeah. And it had to be the pendulum swinging from the crunchy granola, free love hippies of the 70s. It was materialism and capitalism. And right. who cares about the state of the world as long as I can have a BMW?
Right.
Yeah, consumerism, totally. And remember in Family Ties how the parents used to be hippies? Mm-hmm. And then Alex P. Keaton was the yuppie. Like, yeah. So that right there shows us that tells us everything we need to know about where these shows came from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you guys know what the first primetime soap opera was? The very first one?
Okay, hold on. Was it like Peyton Place or something?
It was Peyton Place.
Oh, totally pulled that out of my ass.
Wow.
I was not going to say that. Good for you.
Kristen, exactly. Mm-hmm. Wow, already season 15. She's the champ already. Peyton Place was in 1964 with Ryan O'Neal and Mia Farrow.
Oh, I remember. Didn't know Mia Farrow was in that show. I kind of feel like I want to watch that.
Wouldn't that be kind of fun?
That would be very interesting to see the genesis of the primetime soap. How it
really
began.
Would, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's an attractive couple.
Yes, it is.
So there were really just three shows that reigned supreme in the late 70s and all throughout the 80s, Dallas, Knott's Landing, and Dynasty. And as luck would have it, each one of us loved one or more of these shows. And today we're going to remind you why they were so spelling-binded. Aaron spelling-binded. Carolyn, do you love that? I did that just for Carolyn.
Mm-hmm. I do.
Little wordplay.
I love that little wordplay. So let's start with my favorite, Dallas.
I'm doing a flag. I'm waving the flag. Yes. Da, da, da. I'm in a marching band. Da, yeah. da, da, da. Every so marching band did it.
Very yeah. yes. Mm-hmm. And you might be surprised as to one of the reasons that this is my favorite show. It happens to correspond with the same dates that I moved from Texas to New Jersey. So as you know, Dallas had people, as you might know, Dallas began airing in April of 1978, and it really put Texas on the map. I mean, mm-hmm. everybody thought Texas was like South Fork and the Ewing family. And so I was kind of like this little expert. Like people could come to me and say, oh, did you do this in Texas? Like Texas was a really cool thing, a cool place to be from. So in addition to just the storylines and the plot lines and everything, I felt like I was a little bit elevated in my new life in New Jersey because of my previous life in Texas.
Mm-hmm. You had an identity.
Yes.
And it helped you stick out.
Yes.
In a good way. In a good
yeah,
way.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. in a very good way. So here's a little background for you. In April of 1978, a new family was welcomed into our homes via our television sets. They were a little more glitzy than the Ingalls and the Waltons and the Bradfords.
Little bit.
Just a little. Mm-hmm. Just a little. And as we've said, it was the Ewings from Dallas, Texas. They were a dynasty whose wealth derived from their oil empire, as everybody thought Texas was just oil wells and oil. Mm-hmm. And actually, my dad worked for Texaco, so it kind of kind of
you're basically a Ewing.
My dad used right. to go out, mm-hmm. and we would right. go with him, and he would have to go check the oil, all the oil rigs.
Yeah.
Oh, would stop by like a chain, like just in the middle of West Texas. That'd just be yeah. like a fence or like a big gate. He'd have the key. We had to unlock it. We'd drive right out. I can remember that smell.
Oh, yes. Wow. And I think people in Texas sometimes too thought they were like those giant like oil derricks or whatever. Like
yep, those I remember
big
those.
Things mm-hmm. where they were really just like you said, Michelle, these just in the middle of nowhere. And sometimes like in the middle of a small town, like you'd see house, oil rig, house.
Yeah.
It was just bizarre. And they were just pumping along.
Just pumping, pumping, pumping.
Yes.
Was it called Ewing Oil? Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. And we really followed the rivalry between brothers J.R. and Bobby Ewing, and really the entire Ewing clan kept America tuning in for 13 seasons. 356 episodes. And interestingly enough, you guys, CBS never envisioned Dallas to be the winner that it became. It was initially scripted as a non-continuing, just five-part drama. So almost kind of like a little mini-series.
Oh,
and I didn't know that. How about that? So it aired the first time on April 2nd in 1978, and then it ran five consecutive Sunday nights. And each week, the ratings got higher and higher and higher. And so based on those impressive numbers, CBS approved 13 additional scripts, and season one officially began.
Wow.
And then, as we said, for 356 episodes until May 1991. And at that time, it had become the most watched series in the world and had spawned successful spinoff series like Knot's Landing, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But for me, I mean, I think 356 episodes, I got to be honest, you guys, I didn't watch 356 episodes.
No,
I think my, you know, my love of the show was those initial first few seasons. Mm-hmm. Really, to me, it was about those original characters. So we had Miss Ellie Ewing, kind of the matriarch of the Ewing family. We had Jock, the dad. Then, as I mentioned, we've got Bobby and J.R. Ewing, always at odds with each other. Bobby was played by Patrick Duffy, our man from Atlantis, who is now...
Oh, I forgot about the... I mean, he had webbed hands.
Yes, we love Patrick Duffy.
And I had such a crush on him.
Yes,
little 10-year-old Michelle had such a crush on Patrick.
Everybody did. And he was the good brother, you know? And
yeah,
he was.
Well, that too, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And do you know who he's married to today?
I do.
I don't.
I do.
Okay, Michelle.
Linda Pearl. Yeah.
No.
They're so cute. They're all over Instagram.
Adorable.
They're so cute.
Yes.
They both look, they look great, but they look their age. They look great. Yeah. They're such a cute, they're such a loving couple. And I don't think it's first marriages for either of them. I feel like, didn't they get married only like maybe 10 or, recently?
It's fairly recent, but it's a real, fun meet cute story. I can't remember all the details, but I remember them kind of sharing it in an Instagram reel. It was cute.
Linda Pearl will always be to me. I mean, she's been in a lot of things, but to me, she will always be Sean Cassidy's co-star in the made-for-TV movie that we're never going to talk about like normal people. Google it, because we're not going to talk
about
it.
Right. No, we can't. No. We won't even go there.
110% agree. And I'm not sure how Linda Pearl would feel about that. That is right? How we remember her career, but I
remember her from Happy Days. Wasn't she on Happy Days?
Yeah, she was the mom of the girl from Poltergeist.
That's right.
Well, she was Fonzie's
how my mind works. Mom?
Well, she ended up being Fonzie's wife or Fonzie's girlfriend in the later seasons. Yeah.
Well, I guess we all remember who played J.R. Ewing. Who would that be, Kristen?
That would be Major Tony Nelson from I Dream of Jeannie.
Yes. Larry Hagman.
Larry Hagman.
Right.
I seriously couldn't come up with his name. I'm like, you know, Tony Nelson. Yeah.
But I'm glad you remembered that. And yes, and I think I do remember, and I think I've talked about this before, that initial kind of confusion because Major Nelson was such a good guy, and I loved I Dream of Jeannie.
Yes.
And now he's evil, and I don't think that's an overstatement.
No. I was conflicted, too. Yes. I really was conflicted.
Conflicted, that's the word.
Yeah. And his mom was Mary Martin. The Broadway actress from Sound of
Music.
That's
right. That's right. My mom used to always say that because we were big Dallas watchers for like
the
first 4 or 5 years.
Yes, exactly.
And I probably every episode should go, do you know who his mother is?
Yeah.
And I think isn't that funny? We always chime in with things our parents told us. Like these were the things that they always had something to chip in with when we were watching.
That's right.
That's exactly right. The other characters, those original characters, we had Pamela Barnes Ewing. Our first introduction to Victoria Principal, or at least for me, it was my first introduction.
Was she a bright girl?
She might.
I think
have
she
been.
Was.
I think she was a bright girl.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's start the rumor that she was a bright girl.
Well, and also, isn't it about this time? Isn't that where Andy Gibb saw her on Dallas and became aware of her?
Yeah, and sure his crush developed. Yes,
that's right.
And as we've said in the Andy Gibb episode. She is not responsible for his mental health.
Oh, my God, no.
She is not responsible. End of story. Okay, moving on. So go
That's
ahead, Carolyn.
Right. No, 100%. Then we had the character that we all love to hate, at least I did, and that would be Lucy Ewing, Charlene Tilton.
I loved her.
Wait, we hated her? I thought we really loved her.
She was kind of
She was bratty, well, but I loved her.
Oh, maybe that's why I liked
yeah,
her.
Yeah, I loved it. I mean, I loved her, but I didn't want to, like, love who she was because she was manipulative. She was like a mini JR.
I suppose.
Me.
Maybe she – I never thought of her like that. I just really liked her.
I liked her because, like, I was always going to identify or project myself, my future self, onto the youngest.
Yes.
Especially when I'm watching a grown-up show. Mm-hmm. I thought she was beautiful and her outfits were so cute.
And most importantly for me, she was 5 feet tall.
Yes. That's right. She was short. Yeah.
Important fact.
Sorry. Mm-hmm. She was fabulously.
She was teeny.
And very clever.
And I was
clever.
Like the teeny people.
And it was very clever of CBS to cast a character like that, like a younger teenager that we could relate to because we've talked about when we think about our regular soaps and we had, you know, we loved Greg and Jenny and, you know, characters like that that we could relate to. So we had a reason to tune in. All right. We're going to wrap it up with Sue Ellen Ewing, Linda Gray. We all love Linda Gray, OG character. Ray Krebs. He was played by Steve Hanley.
I really liked him.
And Cliff Barnes.
I did too. He was cute.
Oh, I loved
I did
him
not
too.
Like him. Mm-hmm. I did not like Cliff
no,
Barnes.
No, I did
though.
Not like Cliff Barnes. No, he's a bad guy. He was he was like a Love American style guy. I didn't like him. But Ray was in the Ray Krebs was in the barn all the time. So
yeah,
he totally was. He was good looking.
Yeah, he was.
Wasn't he?
I always felt sad for him because, yeah, he's always in the barn and he just has this, he has feelings for Victoria.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And well, he's not one of the rich
like
people.
A ranch hand or whatever.
He was, he was like their ranch hand.
He was the Wrangler. He was the Wrangler, I think.
Wrangler. Ooh, look at you. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I like that
using
word.
Using all that ranch terminology. Love it.
I did work on a ranch, you know.
That's right.
Oh, I forgot about that.
The dude ranch. Mm-hmm.
A dude ranch. I worked on a dude ranch.
Gosh. Who was the Wrangler on your ranch? Was Mike the Wrangler?
No, Mike was the maintenance man.
Wait. Understand, listeners, a lot of you are always surprised by the fact that the three of us only met when we were in our 50s. I think I was just turning 50 the week I met you guys.
Oh, show off. Well, yeah.
No. But listen, what I'm going to say is this, is that we've spent enough time together that we've told all each other all these stories, but we forget because one, we've told each other all these stories when we've had menopause brain. Yeah. So it's like almost cruel. Mm-hmm. What I think would be really fun is let's do an episode. Maybe this season we could fit this in where we just say all the things we've done because we've all done lots of stuff. Everybody knows we were teachers and librarians. That's the easy one, but we've all done some weird things. I've done some things that you guys might go, wait, what? I think that would be fun. I wonder if our listeners would like that. Listeners, if you're listening, if you're listening to this, obviously you are. Send us a, oh my God, let's
menopause
just stop.
Brain, menopause.
Season 15, the end.
Okay, well, let's just cut to the chase, everybody. What is the moment you most remember?
Who's JR?
Very good. Yeah. Gosh, you wanted to win that one too, didn't you, Kristen?
There's just nothing bigger. There's nothing bigger on Dallas. There's nothing bigger in TV history. I'm sorry, there's nothing bigger.
No, I have such a distinct memory of going to school on the day that it was going to air that night and being at the bus stop. And one of the guys, a year older than I was, who I wouldn't have thought would have watched Dallas. I mean, it never really came up. And I don't think we always chatted that much at the bus stop. But he was like, who do you think? Who shot JR? Like, that was conversation among all generations. Who shot JR? This iconic storyline aired in 1980, and it caused a nationwide stir. Very similar to the MASH final series finale that we talked about. Millions of viewers tuned in, really worldwide. It became one of the most watched television events in history. And you guys, it turned out that Bing Crosby's daughter shot JR.
Oh,
did you know?
That's my God. I forgot that important nugget.
That is very important.
Oh, my God.
I know her character name. But
What is her name?
Yeah. It's Kristen.
Kristen shot JR. On the show. Yeah. But what is her name in real life?
Kristen Shepherd. Mary Crosby.
Mary Crosby. That's right. Oh, my God.
And we kind of, or at least I did, kind of watched her grow up a little bit because we always watch the Bing Crosby Christmas specials every year, which I'm surprised we never mentioned in any of our Christmas episodes
that we've
done because that was that was just a staple in our house. And I loved, this is so awful, and I've shared this about Lillian before, but Lillian just had a thing when people would divorce, like their first wives, and then marry like a much younger wife. And
oh, so you that's have told us that before, yeah.
Yes, Bing Crosby was one of those people. So we would watch that, but she would say, because he had those young kids, and he was like an old man, and he had Mary, and there were some sons, and they were always on the special, and his wife was pretty young. And my mom would just say, yeah, gosh, you know. He left his first wife, you know, and I think for her. And then he would go on and on. So I always felt like those poor kids, like in my head, they had this cross to bear because of their dad, because the way my mom talked about them.
Mark by their name.
Yes, that's right. Like they had
cheating
to wear
dad.
Yes.
Yeah.
But so Mary, who I watched grow up in the 70s, you know, kind of, she was the teenager, always on those Christmas specials. But yes, she ended up being the shooter. But we didn't know because, if you remember, the cliffhanger they left us with, anyone could have been it. It was like, you know, they show somebody with a gun or just those kind of soap opera-y kind of a thing where they go to like different characters and like you could almost hear the music, you know, da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da, and who
thankfully, current times through the magic of YouTube, you can go watch you can watch that scene anytime you want.
Oh, I'm going to do that. Mm-hmm. It really felt to me like they should have called off school. Like that's how it big was was. Yes. Nobody was paying attention. It was like going to school on Halloween and the teachers were like, everybody, eyes up here on the board. Like we can't. We're going to find out who shot JR.
It was like on the cover of Time. It was a big thing. And here is an interesting fact for you. The producers actually created the twist to satisfy CBS's request for two extra episodes to end the season. So it wasn't originally like part of the storyline, evidently. This was like, let's throw in this little twister cliffhanger thing for these two extra episodes. And again, like, so to keep the secret, we saw these scenes where anyone could have been the one to pull the trigger. But it was such a pop culture moment that there's a novelty record out there that an artist named Gary Burbank did, and of course, a Simpsons episode titled Who Shot Mr. Burns? I'd never seen that one, but I feel like I probably should.
Yeah, Mr. Burns then is in the wheelchair with the blanket over his legs, just like JR was in the next season.
Oh, yeah, remember? like it's from the 50s. You have to have a blanket over your legs. Why do your legs get cold when you're in a wheelchair? I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
I think maybe it was to like, well, maybe you didn't have good blood flow when you were cold. Or two, you know, some people, their legs might have shriveled up a little bit.
And oh, and so they're ugly.
They like covered up their legs. Or they didn't have any legs after the war.
Oh, my God.
I'm just thinking. No, those are some of the reasons.
Has to have the answers.
Yeah.
Right.
There's a story for everything.
Yeah. Okay. A few other quick storylines I want to remind you guys of. Do you remember the Dream season?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Season 9. It aired in 1985 through 86. The season 10 premiere, it was revealed that the entire season prior had been a dream.
The whole season.
That jumps the shark for me. That jumps the shark for me.
Dream for Pamela Ewing. And do you remember why they had to do this or why they did it?
I feel she was leaving or something.
No, it was Patrick Duffy was leaving.
Yes, that's right.
And then he changed his mind. So, of course, the season prior, Bobby Ewing had died.
Right.
And then the next season, Patrick Duffy was like, never mind.
He's in the shower
and he turns around and we all go, what?
And didn't that show his butt?
I think there was maybe like a little foggy, you know, it was kind of one of those like things through the shower glass kind of a thing, if I maybe vaguely remember.
Because that would have been the type of glass in the 80s for sure.
Pebbled.
That type of pebbled, like tempered glass. But I remember that being a big deal, that he's in the shower.
Yes.
And I also remember that being a big deal for me, you know, 15-year-old me, to be like, I'm going to watch that episode.
I know.
Rewind.
Yeah. It's pretty good butt.
Yeah. And that scene is just embedded in my brain. I can close my eyes and just see him like turning. Yeah, like you said, turning. Mm-hmm. And I think you maybe even see the soap or something in his hand.
Yeah, anyway. I can almost see where his hands are placed. And truthfully, I wasn't a Dallas watcher at that time.
I probably
saw this on like Entertainment Tonight, right? They probably did this reveal and replayed that moment on Entertainment Tonight. And because of that, I feel like I'm in on the whole story of Dallas, whether I'm a regular watcher or not, which is what makes these pop culture moments.
Well, that, and I think we've talked about this before too, just the genre of soap opera, you don't have to watch every episode to kind of know what's going on in a lot of these shows. So you can kind of probably see it on Entertainment Tonight and then go, oh yeah, you know, somebody was mad at him because of Victoria, whatever. You can like piece together the whole plot line and you don't have to have watched every episode. All right. Of course, I have a couple more fun facts. I wanted to make sure that you guys knew that in the final season of Dallas, Barbara Eden had a 5-episode guest starring role.
Now, why would Major Nelson?
Yes, yes. And they had been college, I don't know if it was sweethearts, they had had a relationship in college where her maiden name happened to be Nelson. So her character was Leanne De La Vega. And she was a billionaire trying to ruin JR. So I'm guessing that De La Vega was the billionaire guy that she maybe married. Or
okay,
whatever.
So JR and Jeannie went to college together. They were college sweethearts. And her name in college was Nelson.
Nelson.
Her and then she married De La Vega.
She did.
Okay. And became a billionaire.
Yes.
Okay.
And she was impregnated by JR while she was in college. And somehow she lost the baby. I don't know if she had an abortion or a miscarriage or whatever, but it caused her to be infertile. She could never have any more children. So that is what made her determined to ruin JR at all costs. She was not going to leave this planet until she had ruined him. So she was on for 5 episodes. Which
that's
I thought
brilliant.
Was very interesting.
That, I'm clapping for you, writers. That's fantastic.
Oh, I
that's
thought you were really clapping good. For me that I found that.
Okay, you too. Yes. Oh, good sure. for you, okay. Carolyn. Good for you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so as we know, this influence of Dallas on our generation, it extended way beyond its entertainment value and continues today. Because you know what? Maybe next to the Brady Bunch house, South Fork might be one of the most iconic TV residences of all time. And you can actually visit South Fork today. Not only do they have like Dallas-related events, you could get married there. We could have a PCPS gathering at
in
South
the barn?
Fork Ranch.
Can we do it in the barn?
Yes, we can run. We go by the pool. The pool and Charlene Tilton are like also embedded in my mind when she was.
She was always in the pool. She was always
the barn and Charlene Tilton. Because I think Lucy had a crush on Ray.
She had a huge crush on Ray.
So she was always in the barn.
That's right. Oh my gosh, I forgot about that. Like with her little shirts, you know, tied up.
Yep. Yes, like Ellie Mae.
Yes. So you can take guided tours. You can relive exciting moments. You can see the gun that actually shot JR and Lucy's wedding dress, Jock's Lincoln Continental. And how about this? There are 2 special packages they offer. You can live like a Ewing, where you get to experience the life of a Ewing like never before. You get to have JR's VIP steak dinner and champagne in the dining room, a trail ride, and a private tour of the Ewing Mansion. You can upgrade your experience to include a helicopter ride, limousine service, and cowboy hats for an additional fee. I'm sorry, I just think that's so funny. And that would cost you about $325 per person, plus the extra fees for the cowboy hat. Lastly, you can really upgrade it to the Live and Dream Like a Ewing package, where you can spend the night in the world's most
famous
mansion.
Bobby's in your shower?
Oh, I think that's an upgrade too. That's an upgrade as well. That would cost you $1,978 plus a 26% service charge.
Thank you for this extra information.
Just so you know, friends, maybe after you go visit the Benji house, because you can do that's not very far.
Oh,
from
that's
South
a McKinney.
McKinney. So you can make it a twofer. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. A few fun little facts about my favorite nighttime soap, Dallas.
I've driven by it.
Hey, listeners, it's Carolyn, and I wanted to check in. It's 2025, you guys. How's everybody feeling? Well, I know for me, sometimes all of these hormonal changes that many of us are going through can be a real pain. And while there are natural hormonal changes that are going on through our bodies, did you know that there are also more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living rent-free in our environment right now? Yes, disruptors that can affect actually how our hormones function. They're in our food, our water, the air we breathe, the clothes we wear, our skincare. And they all mess with our hormones.
the good news is that we don't have to suffer through all of this anymore because now there's Hormone Harmony, and you've heard me talk about it. It's a formula made only with herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. You've heard me talk about how that menopause-induced brain fog has really messed with me at times, but I've really noticed a difference since I've taken Hormone Harmony, and even my sleep habits have gotten better. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is truly dedicated to making women's lives easier, and that means they only use science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and we are so excited to partner with Hormone Harmony. And for a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code PCPS at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code PCPS for 15% off today.
So my family's primetime soap of choice was Knott's Landing. Which is, by the way, the longest running of all of these soaps at 13 and a half seasons. It ran from December 1979 to May of 1993. And most people knew at some point, but then promptly forgot that Knott's Landing was a spinoff of Dallas. Remember, its main characters, Gary and Valene Ewing. Ewing. We forget that Gary and Val Ewing were Charlene Tilton's mom and dad. So when you talk about the Ewing brothers, you have JR and you have Bobby. Oops, what about Gary?
I know.
We just conveniently forget about Gary.
Yeah.
No offense to people named Gary, but that's probably why. That's not a very...
It's no JR.
JR, yeah.
That's right. And Bobby.
Yeah,
so Val, Gary and Valene, they were teen parents, and they left their daughter at South Fork and went to live in the suburbs of Los Angeles. And there's a whole backstory about how this happened that may or may not appear in any episode, but it is absolutely bonkers. It was something about JR framing Gary for some financial blunder at Ewing Oil and forcing him out of Ewing Oil and into alcoholism, and then Valene running away to find her mama, Lily Mae, in Tennessee.
Oh, that's right.
And then
JR
tracks her down, and he takes Lucy back to South Fork to be raised by, quote unquote, real Ewings. But I don't remember any of this on Knott's Landing or Dallas. So maybe it's just the backstory for the writers. I don't even know. So anyway, Knott's Landing was set in a fictitious coastal suburb of Los Angeles and initially centered on the lives of four married couples living on a cul-de-sac called Seaview Circle in the Los Angeles suburb of Knott's Landing, which I assumed was somewhere near Knott's Berry Farm.
Of course.
Of course, yeah, right? It only makes sense. And at first, it was very Desperate Housewives. It really did focus on suburban life and relationship struggles of all of the people in those perfect houses produced by the upwardly mobile 80s. But these weren't mansions and estates. These really were cul-de-sac people. Mm-hmm. So Gary and Val were the young married couple in the cul-de-sac. Sid and Karen Fairgate were the solid couple, the salt of the earth couple that everyone admired. Karen, played by Michelle Lee, and then her husband by some other guy. Laura, because I don't
care. I used to get so excited when we'd watch it, because my mom and I watched all three of these, and when her name would come up, Michelle Lee, I would get so excited, like, oh, look, I'm seeing my name, like, on the TV screen. Like, it would make me so excited. Yeah,
right? Then there was Laura and Richard, who were constantly in turmoil and probably shouldn't have gotten married. And Ginger and Kenny were the newlyweds, and I have no memory of them. And it dealt with real-life middle-class issues like alcoholism, infidelity, like the cul-de-sac was hopping, you guys, and divorce. Sid and Karen, originally, even though it was a spinoff of Dallas and it was about teen parents, Gary and Valene, Sid and Karen were written to be the core of the show, even though Gary and Val were the stars. Sid and Karen were the beating heart of Seaview Circle. But as the show progressed, this began to change and Knott's Landing got soapier and soapier because it was the 80s and everything was over the top. And the storylines expanded to include crime. Lots and lots of crime. You got your rape, you got your kidnapping, you got your murder. And Seaview Circle became a very dangerous place to live. And it might have, a lot of this crime it may have started right around the time that Sid's sister, Abby Cunningham, later Ewing, foreshadowing, played by Donna Mills, moved to the cul-de-sac with her children, and all hell broke loose.
Yeah. Wasn't she just deliciously evil,
She was deliciously
and
evil.
And beautiful. Like,
so
I would
study
my television. Mm-hmm. And you couldn't pause back then. You couldn't pause it.
No, no, no.
But anytime she was on, I was like,
her hair was perfection.
The flip was like perfect.
We really did love to hate her. Mm-hmm. And FYI, her son was played by a young Brian Austin Green before he lost his virginity to Tori Spelling on 90210.
Probably just a few miles down the road.
Just down the road in Beverly Hills. So some would say that the addition of Abby would prove to be the best move that producers ever made to the show. After the first season, the ratings were not awesome. And after that, every show had to have an Abby. Not just Knott's Landing. Every TV show had to have an Abby, that person that they love to hate. So I think this is quite hilarious. Although they don't belabor their association with Dallas, they do acknowledge it when Gary receives news of his brother Bobby's death. And he returns to Dallas for the funeral. And Val even names one of her twin babies Bobby. These were babies that she had been told were stillborn, but they were actually stolen for black market adoptions. But don't worry, she got them back.
Oh, phew.
But then, as we all know, Bobby's death was just a dream.
So wait, did she have those babies in the dream state? Like, think about that.
Well,
year a dream on Knott's Landing too?
Does the dream apply to Knott's Landing? I don't think that it does, because on Knott's Landing, this was never acknowledged, and Bobby was never mentioned again.
Well, that was going to be really hard because now
there was nothing they could do.
Well, like those time travel, time circle things you get into, like 13 going on 30 or Big or whatever, those movies, that whole thing wasn't really a thing yet. So the writers probably were scratching their heads like, wait, we can't do this time circle. Like, this is too confusing.
They're like, damn you, Patrick Duffy. And after that, there were no more crossover storylines between Dallas and Knott's Landing. Because I'm sure Joan Van Ark was like, what am I supposed to do with this baby named Bobby?
I have an idea. They could have made it a pretend year for them too, a dream year, and then in the next season she just has like a baby doll that she calls Bobby. That's so creepy.
Okay, that's really good. That could have gotten super soapy. But here's what I think is the most important cultural impact of Knott's Landing. I, Kristen Nielsen, believe that it's possible that Knott's Landing is the vehicle for bringing back the name Abby, played by Donna Mills, the first villain on Knott's Landing. And I looked it up. I did some research. I looked it up. There were almost zero babies named Abby in 1978. And then you see a sharp spike in 1980. It literally goes straight up. And that spike continues to grow until the early 2000s.
Were you looking up Abby or Abigail?
I did both.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think definitely the television shows and characters that either people love or love to hate certainly would influence baby names.
Yeah. I mean, there were no – did you have any Abbeys in your classes growing up?
No.
No Abbeys.
I don't have any friends named Abby.
That was
Grace
an old lady name. Mm-hmm. Like Abigail. Like Abigail Adams.
Right.
That's
the
only way we knew Abigail.
It's true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think that's the lasting impact. All these people, all of us know tons of kids named Abby now. And by kids, I mean 25-year-olds, 30-year-olds. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Good job.
Yeah. Nice. Fun fact.
So let's move on to the third show we're going to talk about. And this show aired from January of 1981 to May 1989, a little over 8 years. And that's Dynasty. So Dynasty copied the Oil Scion theme, but moved the setting to Denver. And it aired on ABC, like I said, for almost 8 years. This is the one show of these three that was produced by ABC series puppet master Aaron Spelling. And it was actually created to compete with Dallas. By 1981, Spelling had already produced Starsky and Hutch, Charlie's Angels, The Love Boat, Fantasy Island, Vegas, and Heart to Heart. So why did he pick Denver?
Yeah,
because it's
question.
The best city to live in America. Obviously. But really, this is a fun story, and it comes from a great article called Commas, Catfights, and Clothes. Sorry. This is... I just read the wrong... Sorry, you guys. And it comes from a great article called Commas, Catfights, and Clothes. That didn't make sense to me.
No, I was like, commas.
But we didn't really react like, right. Like commas. Okay, like, okay. I didn't know.
I know. Yep. An oral history of Dynasty that was included in a 2021 issue of Denver's 5280 magazine. And I'll share the link in this week's Weekly Reader for those of you who were Dynasty fans, because it's really a fun article. It's super interesting. So as otherworldly as Dynasty was compared to Dallas, it did possess one tenuous tie to reality. Denver, where the Carringtons lived, married, divorced, remarried, died, came back to life, divorced again, remarried again, and once discovered a trove of stolen Nazi treasures beneath a lake. Although Dynasty was filmed in Los Angeles, it was Denver that helped inspire the series. After Aaron Spelling said, "We'll do oil, but somewhere else." I mean, smart, right? You couldn't do oil again in Dallas.
No.
"We'll do oil, but somewhere else. There's more oil in Denver."
Is there
more
oil in
I should
Denver?
Say, there's more oil. There's more oil in Denver. Mm-hmm. That's how you'd say it in Texas. There's more oil in Denver. I actually don't know.
I think that's significant. If you don't know, I think the answer might be no.
Well, then he met and befriended a Colorado billionaire named Marvin Davis, and that's who he'd eventually base the character of Blake Carrington on.
Okay.
Like, so that was like based in reality, which I think is really interesting. So Spelling took on writers Richard and Esther Shapiro's vision of this rich and powerful family who lived and sinned in a 48-room Denver mansion. I see that here all the time, you guys, truly.
Right, the 48-room mansion.
Living and sinning
on your 48, block.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So as we know, the story of Dynasty, it centers on oil magnate Blake Carrington, played by John Forsythe. So handsome. Well.
Oh, and that's Charlie, by the way.
Yeah, that is that true. Mm-hmm. So he already had an in with Aaron Spelling,
with Aaron Spelling.
And his glamorous new, much younger wife, Crystal, who was his former secretary.
Scandal.
I know. And that was played so well by Linda Evans.
Yes. Iconic.
But I know, right? And their hairdo. Mm-hmm. My mom idol worshipped Linda Evans in
for
everything
good reason.
From her hairdo mm-hmm. from to her fashion.
And I do remember it was the first time we got to see Charlie. Do you remember that being impactful for you?
Yes.
Yeah, that voice was so familiar to us.
We only knew the voice, and it came through the little intercom on Charlie's Angels, and here he was in the flesh. And you're mm-hmm. like, "Oh my God, that's what he looks like?"
Mhm. Mm-hmm. But when the ratings dropped during Dynasty's first season, the producers decided to shake things up and add a villain.
There you
much
go.
Like Dallas, much like Knott's Landing.
Everyone needs an Abby.
You do. Mm-hmm. So enter British star Joan Collins. Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, I did not know she was not from the beginning. She was added.
Yeah, she arrived in season two as Alexis Carrington, mm-hmm. Blake Carrington's ex-wife, and a just straight-up deliciously nasty female mm-hmm. version of J.R. Ewing, and a perfect nemesis for Crystal, which is sealed when she discovered that Alexis caused her miscarriage by startling her horse with a gunshot.
How does that work again?
So they famously butted heads. And according to entertainment columnist Sue Cameron, the catfights became so popular that the press were invited to watch the filming of them. And Crystal and Alexis famously brawl for the first time in Alexis's studio and then later in a koi pond. And I feel like that one is really historical, right?
I can see it. I love that they invited the press. That's fantastic.
I know. And I love this. The producer, Douglas S. Kramer, said, "We walk a fine line just this side of camp. Careful calculations are made. We sense that while it might be wonderful for Crystal and Alexis to have a cat fight in a koi pond, it would be inappropriate for Joan to smack Linda with a koi."
Because now it's comedy.
So funny.
Yes,
he's like, "We walk a fine line."
Yep.
He's very serious. Well, adding Joan Collins to the cast boosted the ratings immediately, and by the fall of 1982, it was a top 10 show, and by the spring of 85, it was the number one show in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. Okay, so we can't talk about Dynasty without talking about the fashion, primarily of Crystal and Alexis, because it really became iconic and a style. I mean, these women made their mark on 80s fashion. I remember my mother talking about dresses that were Crystal Carrington dresses. Or you could look at a nip-tucked blazer with enormous shoulder pads and immediately think that's an Alexis blazer, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. In this article that I referenced earlier, Florence Mueller, she's a textile and fashion curator for the Denver Art Museum. She said, the difference between Dynasty and Dallas is in Dallas, it's JR who is the main character, and he's a masculine character. In Dynasty, it's feminine characters who are dominant. Women are becoming much more powerful in the professional world at this time, right? Mm-hmm. And the big shoulders are expressing this.
It's taking up space. I'm
so
here.
So I find this so interesting that all of these fashion choices were very intentional, more for their place on the ladder of success, really, rather than just for their appearance.
Yeah. Here I am. You can't ignore me.
That. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah.
Wow.
I thought that was interesting. So a few other notable characters and stars on Dynasty. Pamela Sue Martin was Blake's promiscuous, very spoiled daughter,
Nancy
Fallon.
Nancy Drew. That's
right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she'll be replaced by Emma Sams in season 5 as amnesiac Fallon. Because in season 4, Fallon is presumed dead after a car accident. But then she reappears months later and she's different actress. So she's an amnesiac.
So Fallon. When you have amnesia, your looks change?
Yeah, of course.
Well, maybe was it an awful accident?
Can't believe you didn't know that.
They have facial reconstruction. Maybe it was like her face got all.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. Well, Blake's son, Steven, is played by Al Corley. So cute. So cute. I had such a huge crush on him. Look him up. Al Corley. Whose complicated relationship with Blake, his dad, stems from their fundamental political differences and Blake's disgust at his homosexuality. Which seems to come and go, though, because he will marry twice. In 1982, he leaves Denver for Indonesia, where he'll go missing and be presumed dead after an explosion on an oil rig he's working on. But Blake will find him a few months later in a hospital in Singapore. However, he's had plastic surgery because of all his burns, obviously, and is now played by actor Jack Coleman.
Oh, see, it's so handy. It's so, so handy. Like, you can actually, just, make up anything.
And actually, plastic it's Jack surgery. Coleman. I'm picturing it now. It's Jack Coleman is the one I always thought
the
was
cute
the cute.
One. Okay.
He was the cute Stephen.
Plastic and then, surgery solves all your writing problems.
It does. And amnesia. Mm-hmm.
And amnesia.
And amnesia.
Yes.
And a dream.
Yep.
A good dream.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then season 2 brings us Crystal's greedy niece, Sammy Jo Dean, played by Heather Locklear, who will later marry Stephen. And she's going to later marry be one of gay Stephen's wives. She'll be his first wife, and they'll have a baby, Danny, together. Now, Sammy Jo is very naughty, and that gets her into all kinds of dicey predicaments. But you root for her because she is Heather Locklear, and
of
she's
course.
Gorgeous.
Yes.
And so cute.
Because she's T.J. Hooker's partner.
Well, and on Battle of the Network Stars, like constantly.
Oh, totally.
So you just love her.
Another adorable person. And I have to point out, I never watched a single episode of this show, and I know every single person you're talking about.
Well, here's another one then. Mm-hmm. What about the absolutely drop-dead gorgeous John James played Jeff Colby, and he'll marry Fallon. Now, does he marry Pamela Sue Martin Fallon or Emma Sams Fallon? I don't remember.
Oh, I thought that was a little quiz.
Yeah, it would be. Okay, I have just a few fun facts to end this up. The working title for Dynasty was Oil.
No way.
Oil. I'm going to call it Oil.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was like, how would they spell that?
Oil. George Peppard from the A-Team, but earlier, Breakfast at Tiffany's, was originally cast as Blake.
Oh.
But felt the role was too unsympathetic. That's according to the web. Yeah,
whatever.
Costume designer Nolan Miller, so he was very famous for the fashion. He designed approximately 3,000 costumes over the course of the series, saying, "I never want to see them wearing the same outfit twice." Weekly wardrobe budget?
Oh my God.
$35,000. And that's in the early 80s.
You guys, that is a career that man had. That's like like Bob Mackie level.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. Right? To have
it
that
really
as
was.
Your job?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Well, yeah, and also to say, I don't think these characters should ever wear the same outfit twice. I mean, there's your job security. Let's just sell them. I have to be here forever.
I believe that Alex P. Keaton should wear a different button-down shirt in every episode.
Right. Okay. John Forsythe was the only cast member to appear in all 220 episodes of the series.
Oh.
So, you know, Blake wasn't getting killed off. He wasn't. Yeah. Let's see, anything else fun? Oh, during its run, Dynasty explored issues such as sort of like the other ones, but rape, homosexuality, and racial integration. And it put middle-aged women in the forefront, though.
Oh, it sure did.
Yeah, that's yeah. true. And absolutely now I it was, well, because the shoulder pads, nobody else could stand next to them.
But if you think about shoulder pads. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Just Crystal Carrington's hair. Like, I was always, I didn't know if that was gray hair or if that was blonde hair, but I knew it was significant because this was not an ingenue.
Right?
Right.
Right.
It was kind of, wasn't it like a silvery blonde?
Very silver.
Like beautiful.
Yeah.
Yep. She was a woman of a certain age.
Oh my God, you guys, but what, how old? I bet she was in like four. I bet she
oh
was
my
like
God.
42.
Google it.
I don't
want
to. Okay, well. Okay. And then in season four, Diane Carroll appears as Blake's illegitimate African American half sister, Dominique Devereaux.
Oh my God.
And then in 1985, there was a spinoff. Do you guys, did you remember there was a spinoff? It was called The Colbys.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
As Fallon returned from the dead, and ex-husband Jeff followed her to Los Angeles, where they became embroiled in the family intrigues of Jeff's wealthy California relatives.
The Colbys. I too, yeah, I do remember that.
I don't think I got into that, but I think I probably tried to watch it maybe.
I was just thinking about shoulder pads as we've been talking about it. And I just remember I would have, and I want to know if you guys had this, I would have outfits that had the shoulder pads, but they were Velcro. So you could
yes!
take them out.
Oh, yeah.
Or so yeah. it could be with or without.
My roommate.
Did you have the ones that clipped
school?
On your bra straps? I had the ones that clipped on my bra straps.
I think I did.
Because you got to have your shoulders high.
Right.
My roommate in grad school, hi, Allison, she tells this story about being at a bar in college, and she's just out there on the dance floor, and she's just dancing super hard, and her shoulder pad, like, makes its way out of her sleeve and lands on the dance floor, and everyone thinks it's a maxi pad, and so they all just, everyone's just, like, backing up, like, oh, no, and she's like, no, it didn't come out of my underwear, it can't, she's like, it's my shoulder, I swear to God, it's my shoulder.
Yeah, mine that Velcroed on my bra straps would slip backwards sometimes. And so you would have like this
hump.
Little hunches on your, yeah,
yes.
hump on your.
So in case you're wondering, we asked you all what your favorite nighttime soap opera was. And spoiler alert, it was Dallas. Came in with 55% of the vote. I was surprised with this one. Second place, Knott's Landing with 24% of the vote.
I'm a little surprised by that, too.
I know. Me, too. But, you know, you figure maybe if Dallas had such a huge following, some of those people, you know, went over to Knott's Landing, too. So that, you know, they kind of had a built-in maybe advantage. And then Dynasty rounded it out with 21% of the vote.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Well, what also, it's a very unscientific poll, everyone.
No, it's not.
We didn't like control the ages or anything like that.
It's peer reviewed.
Or
that's right.
That's true. It is science. You're right.
Carol looked at it, and then I looked at it. Well, Michelle looked at it.
Okay, so quickly, I just want to tell you, I mean, when did primetime soaps die? Because we don't really have those anymore. Now it's the Real Housewives.
Really.
Now it's all like reality on our primetime soaps, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So the late 80s and the early 90s marked a shift for the nighttime soap operas. And while shows like Dynasty and Dallas continued to dominate the ratings, the genre began to evolve. So opulent, that opulent larger-than-life drama of the early 80s that we've just been talking about gave way to more complex storylines and character development. And so we see series like Melrose Place and Beverly Hills 90210 introducing younger and more relatable characters and tackled contemporary issues, which broadened the appeal of the genre, right? Because then you've got these, like I said earlier, I latched onto, you know, Charlene Tilton because she was the only youngster on that show.
Right.
But now you've got all these other shows that are really speaking to
and we were exactly
a different demographic.
Of Melrose Place. Like those people were born the same day I was born. And then we have our compatriots who were born the exact day that Tori Spelling was born.
These
were speaking directly to us. And they were soapy. And there was some plastic surgery. And there was still amnesia and stuff like that.
Yeah,
but it was a little more relationship and like you said, character driven.
And more realistic storylines, I think,
too.
It
wasn't based
on the
wealth
more.
To the same degree.
Remember in Melrose Place, wasn't there, this is just popping into my head, the scene or the plot line where the woman like peel her face off.
Yeah, that is true.
Oh my God. What was her name? And she's looking in the mirror and she peels her face off and it's the dead doctor.
She's and I can back. Picture the red hair. She's got red hair.
Straight red hair.
Oh my God. Yes. Why? Okay. Mm-hmm. Right now we're all having menopause brain because we're going to Google her name and it's going to, and people right now listening are shouting it out at us. Shout louder.
It was the who shot JR moment, or it was Bobby in the shower. It was that moment. Yeah. We're like, what?
Yeah.
He married her again, but he thought she was dead and he thought she was a different person.
It was Kimberly.
Kimberly.
Yes. Dr. Kimberly Shaw pulled off that wig. Yeah.
And then she had like a brain tumor or something. That's what made her
She pulled off the wig and her brain was showing. Yes.
Oh, my God. Of course, you guys, I'm sorry. I did have to go to the Googles for this, but of course, it was Marcia Cross.
Yes.
That's right. Yes. Was she in Desperate Housewives?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yes, she was.
I think
Aaron
so,
Spelling.
Yeah.
No, that's Mark Cherry. Never mind.
Yeah.
Got that out.
But however, then as the decade progressed, the popularity of those shows, like the Melrose Places and the Beverly Hills 90210s, began to wane because viewers' tastes shifted towards other TV formats. Now, let's not forget the time. We're starting to get way more channels, way more cable opportunities for us to watch all kinds of other things. Pretty much this is when we're starting to lose, we all have three channels and we have to watch primetime TV. We could watch a whole bunch of other
HBO
things.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And so, while the legacy of nighttime soap operas lives on in the form of countless reruns and cultural references. I mean, Who Shot JR is a battle cry for our generation, right? And boomers, because they were the adults watching it when
they were
the children.
Parents.
That whole era of this primetime soap dominance came to a close.
I mean, it really did end really hard. When you look at what are the hallmarks of the 90s? Think about X-Files and Twin Peaks. We had these we were turning toward dark and supernatural. We had Charmed. We had Sabrina the Teenage Witch. It was getting a little more imaginative, and it certainly wasn't focused on that wealth anymore.
No.
In retrospect, we can see how these shows in particular, these wealth-obsessed shows, really reflected the spirit of the 80s. Mayberry was gone. The Waltons were gone. Get out of here, poor people. Like, we don't care about you anymore. And let's get a little thinky here. We can connect that to the administration of Ronald Reagan and the embrace of trickle-down economics, but we're not a political podcast, so we're not going to talk about it, but Google it. It was the era of the rugged, obscenely rich cowboy, which was Ronald Reagan or JR, or are they one and the same, chicken or the egg, right?
Yeah.
All of this is to say, these shows are historical artifacts, like quite literally, they should be studied. And someday, somebody is going to be able to get a PhD in dynasty. Thank you so much for listening today, and we will see you next time.
And a gigantic, supersized thank you goes out to our Patreon members who take their support of this podcast and the entirety of the Pop Culture Preservation Society to the next level with their monthly donations that make it possible for us to keep on trucking. And today we're giving a shout out to patrons Melissa, Annabelle. I love that name, Annabelle. Mm-hmm. God, I love that name. Sandra, Rosa, Susan, the Dead Sleep Podcast, which we love, by the way, and recommend. Jenny, Sherry, Aggie, Elizabeth, and Nina. And if you'd like to explore the fun perks our patrons get as a thank you for their support, just go to patreon.com, patreon.com, and type in Pop Culture Preservation up in the search box.
And another way you can support us is by liking and following us and sharing the podcast with others. That really helps us get our numbers up and our podcast shown to others.
And it helps our community grow.
Yeah, and it's easy.
Mm-hmm. In the meantime, let's raise our glasses for an extremely expensive toast with the finest vintage of sparkling wine, maybe from the vineyards of Falcon Crest, courtesy of the cast of Three's Company. Two good times.
Two happy days.
To Little House on the Prairie.
Cheers!
Cheers! Clink, 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 clink.
That's right.
The information, opinions, and comments expressed on the Pop Culture Preservation Society podcast belong solely to Carolyn, the Crushologist, and Hello Newman, and are in no way representative of our employers or affiliates. And though we truly believe we are always right, there is always a first time. The PCPS is written, produced, and recorded in Minneapolis, Minnesota, home of the fictional WJM Studios and our beloved Mary Richards. Nanu Nanu, keep on truckin', and may the force be with you.